want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 145 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on March 9th, 2010. I'm your host, XBunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners. That can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is brought to you by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all of your caching needs. Daryl Montu, welcome back. Daryl, I understand that you've had quite a fun weekend there as far as caching goes.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure about the weekend, but at least Saturday, we went on a numbers run with a bunch of the folks from the Motor City Cash Machine Crew. That's our group that we go out cashing with, and it changes from time to time. This time it was a team legend for Reef Rider 52, I believe it is, and JT, who's actually from Canada, so we had an international crew, went out for a total of 106 finds in just under 12 hours. All of those local, all traditionals, but a couple of puzzle and challenge caches actually thrown in there. And for those who want to keep track, I want to say we DNF'd 14 of those. Six of them, I believe it was, we didn't even really try. We kind of went out there, yeah, no, we're not going to find this one. This is too tricky, hide and left. And then eight of those, we actually legitimately DNF'd, and we were going to log them, but one of them was actually archived by the time we got back. It wasn't even disabled or anything when we were out there, and that's the nice thing about having like the iPhone, and we had so much technology. We had an iPhone, we had a Hero, we had the Pre, we had a, what's it called again, the MiFi, so we had so much technology out there, and we were constantly checking up on any of these caches that were giving us issues, and not too many of them had any helpful information, but yeah, very, very cool because we had a whole bunch of finds and all of them were local too.
Cool. Now, Montu, what have you been up to?
Didn't do too much. Saturday we had four parties booked the trains, and so we're quite busy up there Saturday. Sunday went out to help out with the Largo Train Club, but also had an ulterior motive on that trip. Did some caching there, including my first soaked log. You guys have always been talking about them, but I finally hit my first one that was absolutely soaking wet. Unable to dry it out, and when we tried to sign it, the pen just tore the log up. So when we got back, we did go ahead and log it, but I also emailed the cache owner with enough details that should confirm that we really did find it. And we actually got a reply back a few hours later, and he okayed the find on the log. Only three DNFs for the entire weekend. Managed to get our numbers up to 360. And then to top the weekend off, we went to Jonester's place of employment to find a cache that we found out was sitting there on the property. Unfortunately, this is when things kind of turned sour for us. Just as we found the cache, her boss catches us and wants to know what's going on. Turns out the cacher who placed it hadn't obtained permission. Lucky for us, I had one of those trifold handouts that Cacher University puts out on their website along with us, and that along with an explanation on our part saved the day, and they liked it so much they requested we place one on the property ourselves. And the residents there are going to actually build the outer shell for the cache, which should make for a fantastic hide once it's up and ready to run.
It sounds cool. I'm glad that you got to convert some muggles there.
Yep, definitely nice when you can convert them.
Now, for me, I've just really been getting spring fever. I mean, it's really been turning mid kind of warmish here, and I'm really excited to go out and try and find some more caches now that it's turning warm. And it's really hard to want to stay at work when I look out and see it's so warm outside. But as far as the weekend goes for us, I was really just rearranging the house again still. We got the crib up, so now we're actually officially ready for that baby to come so that our baby can come now. It's official. We have space and room for that baby. Well, Daryl, we've been working on the photography for cachers, so this is the second episode in that. Now let's go ahead and hear that.
Learn to take and use photos for geocachers. It's time for Photography for Cachers.
An enjoyable way to improve your photography skills is to participate in a photo project. There are two common projects within the geocaching community, the 12 of 12 and Project 365. The 12 of 12 was started back in January 2006 by Chad Darnell as a means to document a day in his life, and he invited the readers of his blog to join in. The goal was to have the submissions show how different people from all over the world live the same day in 12 photos on the 12th day of each month. When done traditionally, you'll end up with a little photo diary of your day to share with others. This year is the last year for Chad Darnell's listings, but the project lives on in many other locations. We in the geocaching community have our own version twice each year at geocaching12of12.com. Each month, many geocachers participate and submit their sets to the Podcacher forums. I try to participate in this project when I can, and it's a great exercise as well as being entertaining to look back at your previous sets to see what you were doing in the past. The March 12 of 12 is coming up shortly, so perhaps you want to try pulling out that camera and grabbing 12 photos of your day. Camera phones are especially good for this one, as you always have it with you. The Geocaching 12 of 12 site has some good information on what to do, but you won't be able to submit your sets to the Geocaching 12 of 12 site, as that's not until June. You'll find participating in the 12 of 12 can be quite challenging to get all those images, but with practice, you'll find that it gets easier to do better sets, and those skills transfer well into creating both single and series of images. Project 365 is a bigger commitment, but a bigger reward. As you've likely figured out already, this project aims to create a single image each day to represent your day. The first version I know of was done by Jamie Livingston through Polaroid photos. The result is an amazing and touching story of the final years in the life of this man who was taken by cancer in 1997. In the digital age, it's become a much easier and less costly project, which many have taken on. For 2010, Sonny of the Podcacher podcast began his and invited geocachers to do their own sets. The challenge with the Project 365 is to select one photo which best represents each day and collect them into a group. This again gives you an excuse and a mission to get out shooting. If you're looking to try your hand at a photo each day, check out Photo JoJo's article and pick your day to start. Either of these projects, or the many others out there, will give you the chance to work on your photography skills. It's important to push yourself to improve your skills, but make sure that you have fun while you're at it. When you're done, have a look back, and you'll probably see an improvement in your images, as well as a few things you've forgotten from years back. My background music has been Forbidden by Rob Coslow, and has been provided by Mevio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevio.com. Well, the big news out of Groundspeak this weekend was the publishing of the 1 millionth active cache on geocaching.com. The milestone appears to have been passed on Sunday here in the U.S., but we haven't been able to track down an official time or which cache it might have been. Unfortunately, Groundspeak doesn't keep track of that. They just check every midnight at, you know, how many caches they have. Of note, though, is that on their official press release, they had a point made about it being 1.2 billion page views for 2009 to the geocaching.com servers. We'll, of course, have a link to that in the show notes, but congratulations, everyone, on a million caches.
Now, the latest version of CacheMate for Android is now version 1.3.3. According to the release notes on this version, Smittyware has added support for negative attributes like not accessible 24 hours, timestamp in the logs sent via Twitter, and auto capitalization added to some of the edit fields. We'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Also released this week by Smittyware was CacheMate 1.0.7 for Windows smartphones. This new version adds support for the cache attributes and SMS field notes. They've also fixed issues with many Bluetooth GPSRs, and we'll have a link to that full release in our show notes.
Groundspeak has more good news for those of us with premium memberships. Jeremy Irish posted in the geocaching.com website forum that they're going to be increasing the cache limit of a pocket query to 1,000 caches by May 2nd. The goal is actually to reduce the number of pocket queries being run, which will also better match the limits of the current GPSRs, now pushing 5,000 or more on some of the better units. We'll link to that posting in the show notes as well.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Fellow cacher C. Mike D. asks, do you normally look through the logbook at the cache, or sign and move on? The replies are almost split evenly into three groups: those that look through the logbook, those that simply sign and move on, and the last group that will look through the logbook if there's time and if it's an interesting hide. So tell me, do you normally look through the logbook at a cache, or sign and move on? Do you want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, gqotd.cachingnw.com, and follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Listener feedback.
Hey, Daryl and Andy, this is Dave, Dudley Grunt. Calling with a follow-up on thoughts on what to do if you can't sign the log or don't have a pencil to sign with. Instead of using my pocket knife, what I've done recently is I've noticed that the little sleeve that I keep my pocket knife on my belt has just enough room to slide a little golf pencil in. So now, in addition to the knife, I always have a golf pencil there, and so that's my real backup pen pencil there to sign the logs. So as long as I don't lose that, I have that extra backup. All right, well, happy trails.
Thank you for calling in feedback to our voicemail line. We love to hear your feedback on any of our shows. Our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS. Tonight, on this episode, we're going to actually be talking about our favorite geocaching destinations. And it being spring, we got started thinking, you know, where would we actually like to go out and cache? Or where would we like to give that idea to others, tell them where they could go is a great place to cache from our own experiences? So we called out for feedback as far as people, what they like and what they would recommend. And also, we've got a few of our own. So, Montu, can you go ahead and start us off with places that you recommend as far as a caching destination? And can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, definitely. My personal recommendation, unfortunately, has a lot to do with where I've got a lot of my caches placed. Starkey Wilderness Preserve and Cruise Lake Wilderness Preserve. Both of these wilderness preserves are very beautiful and have been kept in a very pristine condition. The parks try to leave it as undisturbed as possible. There's hiking trails through both parks, and even some paved trails for those that want to take out the bikes and whatnot, or even you know, if you've got a family member that's up to it, even for those that are physically challenged can even get out there on these bike trails because they are paved, and so they can get out there and get some of these far out caches that normally all they can do is park and grabs, but here they can actually get out there to something that's even a 3 or even a 6.5 mile hike. You know, this is where I've got a lot of my caches, and there's a lot of room, especially in Starkey, where there's room to grow. There's over, well, I think there's like about 80 caches in that one park alone now. It makes it very easy to get a good number of caches in one day. Cruise Lake, it's pretty much just starting out. There's only about half a dozen to a dozen caches in there. But this is where, you know, one of the few places where where else can you cache via miniature train? Now, it makes for a very unique experience going through the woods on these miniature trains and catching a couple of caches while you're at it. Andy?
Now, for me, one of my favorite places that we've cached as a family was actually a cache called Captain McCary's Vault, and that's in southern Indiana. And I actually would say the reason that it's one of my favorite is because we did it right at sunrise. You have to hike up this really cool steep hill, and it's in a cemetery type of a vault. I mean, there's not a cemetery up there. This captain guy was buried up there at one time. He's no longer there, but his vault is still there, and the cache is there. And it's really cool. You get to go up there. Check out the webpage for that. We'll link to that in our show notes. That has some more information on the actual vault. But really, I would say that my favorite area is actually anything in like the southern Indiana where it starts to get hilly. It's not too hilly, but it's hilly enough that you get some really interesting scenery along as you're driving. It's not just flatlands like I'm used to up here in northern Indiana. Now, Daryl, how about yourself?
Well, my pick is kind of an obvious one. We've really got started caching at Mackinac Island back in 2005 and have been back a few times since. This is one of those places that it's easy to do a full weekend on the island doing nothing but caching. We've gone twice on 3-day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday kind of deals and it's quite challenging to clear out the island. The last time we were there, I want to say we did 60 caches on the island, and we had already been there before. They have a nice quick turnover of these caches because they do an event there every year, so they try to get rid of some of the older ones and put in some newer ones. You're not going to ever run out of caches to do, I don't think, on that island if you're going up for one weekend a year. And you're not allowed a car. It's all bicycle, horse, and pedestrian traffic. There are some service vehicles allowed on the island, and if you go preseason like we did, it's actually a lot easier, but you do have to watch out for some of the dump trucks. We'll link to this in the show notes if you want to go and follow it up, but this is kind of between the upper and lower peninsulas of Michigan, and really just a nice place for a summer kind of weekend.
Now, next, we're going to listen to some people who had called into our voicemail. But first, before we do that, I want to remind everyone who is live with us tonight, if you want to call in and give us your feedback as far as what you find a great caching destination, places that you recommend to other people, I see a lot of stuff happening in the chat room, but I'd love to hear you guys talk with us, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're on the phone, go ahead and press *8 on your keypad. That'll get you into our line to talk. And then also, if you're in a chat room, go ahead and just press the request to talk in the upper right-hand corner.
Hey, this is Jeff Baldwin from the Middle Tennessee area. And I was calling in one of my favorite caching locations. It's called the Virgin Falls Pocket Wilderness. It is a small place. Just south of Highway 70, in between the cities of Sparta, Tennessee, and Crossville, Tennessee. One of the oldest caches in the state was placed early 2001, is there at the bottom, called the Virgin Falls Cache. There are about 17 caches down this hike. The day we did it, we hiked in and out in one day. Our track log was just at 10 miles. It's 5 miles down into this valley. As you're going down this valley, you're walking along this creek bed that there's no water in. As you walk along it, all of a sudden water comes out of the ground, and you'll have this nice creek flowing for about 50 feet or so, depending on where you are, and then it falls over a waterfall. The bottom of the waterfall, it will go into the ground again. It does this 4 times. Ending up at the bottom, which is Virgin Falls. It's a 100-foot waterfall that hits the ground and then falls backwards into a cavern, probably another 70 or 80 feet deep, and it's amazing to see. This falls is the drain for most of this particular valley in here, so there's even at the end of summer when we went, there was still quite a bit of water coming through. So it's a wonderful hike. You can camp down at the bottom if you're into overnight camping. They said about 17 caches, and it's just an amazing area to visit. Again, that's the Virgin Falls Pocket Wilderness between Sparta and Crossville, Tennessee. You can find it by the Virgin Falls Cache. Is a way to search for that on geocaching.com. Thanks a lot.
The next one was one that was emailed to me by Candy, one of our listeners. She said that her favorite place to cache is Beaver Island, Michigan. It's a special place for her and her husband, Dan. They go there. They love to vacation there. It's a ferry ride north of Charvelos, I believe.
Charlevoix.
Okay, Charlevoix. I should have asked you to pronounce that one as you're a Michigan person.
Yeah, we have a bunch of those weird names up here.
It's like Mackinac Island, she says, without the commercial aspect, though. And it's the most peaceful place that she knows. If you're looking for a place to get away from it all, she'd highly recommend spending some time there. Her favorite cache on the island is called Sweeney's Last Stand, and that's GCGET2. That's at the end of a short hiking trail. They have a very fond memories there on this island, and they like to spend time up there anytime that they can.
Hey guys, this is Art from Centennial State Geocaching, calling in with your question of the week concerning great geocaching places. In the summer of 2007, Karen and I had an opportunity to visit the island of Maui in the great state of Hawaii. Two caches I'm going to recommend as part of this call, and we'll explain why why this is a great spot to do some geocaching. The first cache is GC11Y5T. It's called Saphira's Teeth. It's an earth cache, and it's actually on the western side of the island. It's a lava flow that extends out into the ocean, so you have this big jetty that goes out of lava that's hardened over the centuries, and it actually looks like the teeth of a dragon, hence the name of the cache. And you have to answer some earth cache questions. Tremendous views on that side of the island. You can see the nearby islands off the western shore, and great views of the sailboats out in the ocean. Also, too, there is a traditional cache just a short walk on that same little abutment of lava, and for the little kids, if you go out there, there's a labyrinth that you can walk, a little maze on that same island of lava. The other one, getting in your car and moving a few miles north on the northern western part of Maui, is called Eddie's Natakiali Blowhole Hideout, and I know I butchered that name. This is GC151F. It's a fairly old cache. It's been there since August of 2001. Great views. You're up above the ocean, looking down into a blowhole, so every few minutes as the waves come in, the ocean shoots out of this little blowhole in the rock. Great way to cool off with the kids. Again, try to keep them away from the ocean. But the cache itself overlooks that and overlooks the Northern Ocean. Got to see some sailboarders out there doing a lot of great flips in the winds in the ocean. Maui, and I'm going to assume the rest of Hawaii, will need to get back there and check out the other islands. A great place to cache, and a lot of them are great views, but these are two I'd recommend of the dozens we found during that trip. See you later.
Thank you, guys, those of you who have called into our voicemail line. The voicemail line is always open, 206-350-3GPS. We'd love to hear your favorite places to cache. Even if this show is out and published, we'd love to hear your favorite place to cache. Give us a call, 206-350-3GPS, and leave a voice message for us. Now, for the next part of this section is places that we've not necessarily been and that we can't necessarily recommend, but places that really grab us as far as places that we want to cache, places that we've either heard about people going to cache or places that we just really, really, really want to visit. The first one is definitely going to be Hawaii for me. I would say that I've never been there. My wife has before we were married, before we were even caching, before there was caching even around. And, you know, she tells me how beautiful it is and just what an amazing island it is. And, you know, I really would love to go caching there. So hopefully for me that sometime I could actually get around to doing some caching there. Now, Daryl, what are some places you'd want to visit?
Well, we've gotten so many great ideas from some of the conversations we've had with the guests on Cache Maniacs. Some of them were recorded and sent out, and a lot of it actually comes from the conversations we have with the guests after we end up recording. And Oahu is one of those great locations. We've talked to a few people from Hawaii, and they just tell some wonderful stories about the caches there, about the caching community, and we definitely want to get there sometime too. Now, Seattle is kind of the mecca. We can't leave that one out because that's really where I want to go, and we'll be going this July for the Geo Woodstock. And I'm really looking forward to checking out the Groundspeak headquarters, you know, taking a trip down to Oregon and view that stuff. So that's definitely one of those locations we can't leave out.
And
just because it is.
You get to hang out with a bad cop while you're there too.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have a chance to do some caching runs with a bad cop again, this time in a little different territory than Ohio. A little bit more terrain, I'm sure. But the next one probably is going to be Nashville, Tennessee, which is affectionately called Cacheville because it is such an amazing cache density down there. And there are some really inventive and creative hides. Unfortunately, we didn't ever have the chance to go down there. I've talked to a few people who have and done some power runs down there. It is just amazing at the stories they tell about the quality caches and the quantity of caches. I believe Team Legend 4 said they did about 150 caches in something like 18 hours of caching down there. So that gives you an idea of, they had no real prep. They just kind of drove from cache to cache.
That's pretty impressive. I know that I've actually never been to Nashville, and just from what you know, you've said, and you've called it Cacheville, and my sister-in-law's boyfriend is from there, and he's been caching there, and I really, really, really want to go there too. It sounds like a lot of great caches and a lot of ones that you can pick up quick.
Oh, definitely. Now, hey, you know, Montu and Andy, maybe we should try to set up a meeting down there sometime and get a little thing going and cache our way around there for a day.
I'd be totally willing to do that.
Hey, Montu, you want to take a drive north?
Well, sounds like a plan. We just got to get the dates rounded up where we can all get the time off from work from our respective jobs and go for it.
Yeah, definitely, and do a long weekend.
And a live cacher coffee, maybe.
Oh, hopefully. You know, that's what makes it all fun anyway.
Yeah, it is.
Now, I do want to...
Go ahead.
I do also want to go into Washington, D.C., because everyone knows how much we're virtual fans. And Washington, D.C. is one of those places where there's virtual caches everywhere. And from what we've been told, there are some really good virtual caches in Washington, D.C. So that's definitely going to be a stop on our caching tour whenever we happen to get the time to do it. And how can we forget Canberra in Australia? Just some amazing caches again there that we've heard about. This is one of those places where you're not going to go for numbers of caches. We've heard hikes that are, you know, full day hikes to get one cache with just absolutely amazing scenery. And North Island of New Zealand, very similar kind of deal there. Now, some really amazing scenery to be had, and you know, just really great caches too.
Yeah, and that's one of my picks too, is also Australia. I was there for a month a while back, but it was before I was caching. And, you know, looking back on it, I hate that when you have been someplace before you were caching, and then now you look back and say, man, I wish I knew about caching when I was at this place. And that's one of those places I would have loved to go back and do some caching on, because it was definitely a beautiful place, and I really wish I would have known about caching while I was there.
Well, and Australia is such a huge place, too, that you're certainly not going to do that in a one-week trip.
Oh, definitely not.
So, you know, there's always room to go back there. And, you know, I want to go to Tasmania at some point as well and check out the wildlife and the scenery there, you know, if not for caching as well. So I could definitely take a couple of months maybe in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. It's something you could easily do. Like I said, I was there for a month and definitely did not see nearly all that I wanted to see. But again, I'm sure it could take a lot longer if I was trying to cache my way through the land.
Now, Montu, I understand that you actually have a place that you'd like to go in Florida that really kind of appeals to me as well.
Definitely. That's the Florida Keys. In just that small chain of island, there's about 90 caches packed in there, including several virtuals and even an Earth cache. And one of the virtuals, from what I was seeing on the map, is sitting out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, several miles offshore from the looks of it. So it definitely sounds like some nice caches that I definitely want to go for. My family used to vacation down there during the spring or fall months when it's cooler. And back in those days, the whole family would go down. My uncle was with us, and my dad and uncle would go out scuba diving. And the kids, we'd just have fun there on the island, just doing what kids do, swim, goof around, and have a blast. And now I definitely want to go back and find some of those caches that are down there. So, you know, and all the selections that we've, places that we all want to go, they all are great locations. I'd love to go to quite a few of them. But definitely, since the Keys are in my own backyard, it's definitely one place that I want to get taken care of here sometime soon.
Well, and I believe that's also the home of the southernmost cache in the continental U.S.
Yep, that's correct.
So for those of you who are off into checking off those cool milestone kind of caches, that's another one to look into hitting.
Definitely. Now, this brings us to the close of today's show, but we definitely, this is something that we are interested in, and I know that I was definitely interested, especially that one that Jeff Bolden talked about with the Virgin Falls, something that I would love to go take a look at. I'd love to hunt that whole section out of with the Virgin Falls. So if you guys do have other places that you would love to recommend to other people, give us a call, 206-350-3GPS, and just let us know exactly what the location is and why it's so amazing. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Join us next week as we talk about logging. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and all of our links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line 206-350-3GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.